Hi, gang. Well, we're back again, and we're ready to go with flight number 15. This is another shot of the cavalry, and it looks like they've picked up a couple more friends over here trying to bargain for some candy bars or something. You'll notice there's a little Vietnamese boy that's along with the two gals. You don't see hardly any Vietnamese men. And if they are, they're old men. All the young men are either fighting for us or for the VC. There's just hardly any young men around the village as well. There are women, a lot of young girls working in the field, and then the little boys. But by the time they get 10, 11 years old, they're already trying to, Charlie's already trying to draft them into his outfit. So, and then of course there's the old men that just aren't hardly able to walk, but that's just about all you see around here. Well, there's another better shot perhaps of a rice paddy in the background also. Slide number 14. Here's another shot of a rice paddy, and this is the road on the way down to the 101st area from Duck Fur. And this road goes down about a click and a half to the 101st area. Coming down the road there, you'll see some water buffalo being led by little Vietnamese. And these water buffalo are actually the mainstay of the manpower force of the Vietnamese. They use them to do their plowing and actually any type of hauling wood or labor that they're not able to do by their own manpower. Why, they get the water buffalo to help. They've been tamed over the years, and although a water buffalo can be quite dangerous when it's shot or if it's halfway wild, but these are all quite tame. And just remind you of a big old trotting, like a Brahma bull, I guess, or something like that over in the States. Perhaps just a big cow in a way. They actually are quite a mark of wealth over here. There aren't too many water buffalo, and to own a water buffalo is to be among the wealthier of the Vietnamese people out here in the rural area. And flying over the mountain areas, we see large groups of water buffalo just sort of running wild now because they've been abandoned. And when the farmers left the area, and Charlie wasn't able to take advantage of them either, and so now they're just kind of roving in herds on their own. So we do see quite a few of them out there. Slide number 15. This is a shot of the 101st Airborne area down here at Duck Fur, or near Duck Fur, I should say. You'll notice all the sand. I remind you that we are only about a click and a half away from the beach, from the ocean. And this whole area is mostly sand. It's also fairly flat, although there is some rolling hill country. In the foreground here, you'll notice that the road has had the good old, what we call the pentaprime treatment. It's kind of an oil stuff, and it mixes with the sand and or dirt and makes a pretty good road, and it keeps the dust down, too. This is a similar setup as we had at Duck Fur, I mean at Con Chuang, as far as the way the headquarters area is organized. The building we're interested in is clear in the back there. It's called the TAC, the Tactical Operations Center, and this is where all our main radios are and where we run our strikes from, you might say, because this is where the fighters check in, and of course we always check in with them too. Every 30 minutes we call back to this area and tell them our location. If at all 30 minutes we haven't checked in, they will call and try and get hold of us, and if they can't, then they send somebody out looking for us. So that way nobody ever disappears for more than about 30 minutes at any one time. That way we can keep track if somebody suddenly goes off the air. And, I guess that's about it for this area. I might point out that in this quadrangle area here, this is where we received our awards that I told you about recently, where we received our air medals. And it was a real nice little ceremony in this area. They also have some small parades here once in a while for visiting dignitaries. And we thought for a while that McNamara was going to come over to our camp area. He did come in to Duck Fur, but he only flew around the area in a helicopter. He didn't have time or have a chance to come over to our battalion area here, the brigade area. So we didn't have a break for him. Too bad. Slide number 16. This is a shot taken right across the street from the brigade headquarters area there. You'll notice that how we have our sandbags set up there to make parking areas for our jeeps. We have little revetments set up for each jeep, and this way if a mortar hits there, it won't blow up all our jeeps at once. And it looks like I might have in the background caught somebody there in the act of watering the grass. I'm not real sure. Looks like maybe it was. Too bad about that. I didn't mean to sneak any pornography into my slides. You'll have to excuse me. You'll notice the very deep, clear blue skies. This was taken probably 8 or 9 in the morning. In the mornings, it's perfectly clear like this for almost every single morning. And then, of course, we do start getting a full scattered clouds in the afternoons out on the coast, and an occasional large cloud. But for the most part, we have real clear and also very hot days. And it is a nice climate in a way, in that it's, as you can see, a nice atmosphere around here. A good, deep, clear blue sky. You almost think that you're in Colorado instead of at sea level. Slide number 17. This shows the 101st Airborne area again. This is looking the opposite direction and shows our chopper pad area in the background there. And we have a large number of choppers that support the brigade that fly out of that area. Slide number 18. Okay, quit laughing. This is serious. actually, this is our fat gang, and we're all clowning around there. From left to right, that's Jack Baker, Jan Stevens, Harvey Blanton, Jerry Ellington, and myself. And I'm not that much taller than everybody else. It's just that I'm standing on sort of a little hill there, a little rise that's to the right. This was taken up at July, and the village in the background is the same type that we were living in at July there. You'll notice that this is considerably more civilized up here. These buildings are a little more better built. Incidentally, our helmets don't really fit like that. We just took the helmet liners out, and we're just wearing the pad itself. And of course, it just kind of falls on your head. We were just kind of clowning around a little bit there. I happen to be looking at the finest bunch of facts in Vietnam. I just thought I'd tell you that. Slide number 19. This was also taken at July in the same area there. We were getting ready to have a big barbecue at the airmen. They had invited us over, and so we came over to chow down on their behalf. This was taken about 1800 in the evening. You'll probably notice the cloud out there over the ocean. They had some real pretty sunsets around there. Slide number 20. Now, this is a picture of the bunker right beside the area there where the airmen live. And this is a very typical sandbag type bunker. We dig a ditch down into the ground about 6 feet deep. Then we cover the whole area above it with sandbags, and this will protect you from anything except the larger mortars and rockets. And of course, at the first sign of an attack, we all come piling out of these hooches and run into these bunkers. Slide number 21. This is the barbecue. This is a couple of our airmen here preparing steaks and hamburgers. I don't know what all they had on there. I think that we had steaks that night. And real fine. Somebody made up some real good barbecue sauce, and you can see how we rig up our pit with a half a barrel there. Works real good. Slide number 22. Now this is a picture looking over towards the some or more of the hooch area. You'll notice that all our sidewalks are boardwalks that are raised up a little bit. This keeps you out of the mud during the rainy season. And this is our head crew chief sitting here looking at the camera, Sergeant Ellis. Real fine too. Slide number 23. This is our Task Force Oregon headquarters gang. On the left here is Major Stinson. He is the tailor. And then in the center there is our boss. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dillinger. He is the ALO, the chief ALO for our Task Force Oregon. And on his right is Major Plum. Now, Major Plum was one of the instructors in my T-Bird PIT flight when I was learning to be an instructor back in 62 down at Randolph. So we've known each other a long time, and it's real good to see him again. He's just a heck of a good chief. Slide number 24. This was taken west of Duck Foray here, about 10 or 15 clicks, and I took several slides here of a B-52 strike to try and show you just what kind of a saturation we get with these things. This particular shot was taken from quite a ways off, but in the center of the picture you can see the bomb hits, and you can tell the approximate run of the bomber that made this pass. In other words, it was running from the bottom of the picture towards the top of the picture. Slide number 25. This was another shot of the same strike. And now in this case, the strike came from the left to the right. You can see the pattern. I might point out that each one of these little white spots you see down there are anywhere from about 4 to 10 feet deep, and anywhere from about 10 to 20, 30 feet across. Those are all pretty large craters, actually. This shot was taken from about 2 to 3,000 feet up. I might point out that if you were anywhere within, say, 400 or 500 feet from any one of those craters, you would now be deaf, even if you weren't killed from the shrapnel, because the blast would have blown your eardrums out. Grizzly thought, huh? Slide number 26. This is a shot of another strike taken in another area, another B-52 strike. And again, shows you what kind of coverage we get with saturation bombing with these things. You can also begin to appreciate the terrain problem we have with all this heavy undergrowth. Even that stuff that looks like it's real short green grass is actually about waist deep. And since Charlie isn't very tall, he can hide real easy in that stuff. Slide number 27. Now this is another picture of that same strike, the one just previous, from a little different angle. Slide number 28. This was taken from my tent. As you can see, I'm setting up on sort of the side of a hill here, and I'm overlooking the valley floor at the 101st Airborne area. Now, Duck Fir itself and the runway are right behind that mountain in the background there. That mountain is actually only about 800-900 feet high. And right behind that is the runway. Now, that's looking off to the northwest. And looking towards the mountains, and you can see the mountains in the far, far background there. You'll notice that we do have some trees in our area, not too many though. This particular collection of tents and stuff belongs to my battalion, the 2nd 502s. Slide number 29. Now this is another shot of the 2nd 502s area from my tent. This is looking pretty much due north this time. Slide number 30. This is a picture of my the Jones Hilton on the hill, as the guys call it. They razz me about it. As I was telling you in some of my letters, you can see how I've rigged it up here with the ammo boxes for my washstand there in the center, to the left of the picture, actually. And then you can see kind of a little washstand there. How I've rigged up my shower up there to the right. You can see my washing shower hanging from a tree. So to give you a little better idea, perhaps, of how I've set my tent up, you'll notice that I have raised my tent pretty high so that I get a better breeze blowing through. And since I'm up on the side of a hill anyway, why, it makes it pretty nice. All of these boxes ringing my tent here are filled with dirt, and it makes a pretty good protection from mortar or shrapnel in case we were hit here at our area. Slide number 31. This is another shot of my tent taken from a little different angle this time, looking down the hill. And you can see inside the tent, you can see my mosquito netting set up around my cot there. And of course, this is a very important thing. And I guess that's about it. I might point out there, for instance, see the box underneath that pole. Those boxes are small, they carry M79 grenades in them, and they're real handy little boxes. Like this one, for instance, I've got the door on the inside there, and it's like a little closet. I can just open the door up, and I've got all kinds of goodie stuff in there. I've got a little gasoline lantern and some rags and just all kinds of little goodies I use around here, like bug spraying and stuff. I might point out that all of the side flaps of my tent, of course, I have tied up around there, around the side, so I can get good circulation for the breeze. And of course, if a rainstorm comes up, I let all these flaps down, and they hang down below the boxes, so that it makes a real good seal, and I don't get any rain into the main area of my tent at all. So it works out pretty good. Slide number 32. Now this is the big blow, as it's come to be known around here. This is the ammo dump explosion. And this was taken about, I'd say, 15 minutes after the thing first started exploding. And this was taken from my tent, and I had just stopped by here to pick up my camera on the way to the flight line, because I knew I was in for some spectacular pictures. And I'd like to remind you that this was about a mile and a half away from the column of smoke that you're looking at there. And standing right where I was as I took this picture, and I was already starting to get a lot of debris falling out of this cloud. Now, of course, this is looking to the east, and since in the afternoon we always have a sea breeze blowing in towards the land, it was blowing the smoke right over the camp area. And out of this cloud line, there was a lot of paper, pieces of canvas from the tents, and light debris like that was falling out of the clouds in the area. It reminded me of reading about the fallout at Hiroshima or something like that. Pretty grim. Slide number 33. This was taken from probably, I guess I'm probably 3 or 4 miles south of the area where the fire is, where the main explosion is. You can see it's right on the beach, and of course looks pretty small from my vantage point. I'm up about 3,000 feet high also. And I was starting to move in towards the area, but I was pretty cautious because I wasn't sure just how far reaching these explosions were as far as shrapnel and everything. And I wasn't planning on getting myself shot down or whatever. So I was kind of sneaking up on it. And this is looking almost due north. The coastline along here runs about 340 degrees. It doesn't run straight north and south. I guess that's not really important, but I thought I might point that out to keep you oriented. Slide number 34. And this is getting a little closer now, and I've gotten out over the water. I thought I could probably get the best pictures of this by flying over the water. And as you can see, of course, the breeze has taken all the smoke inland. And the smoke is blowing right over the 101st area, which is just about a mile and a half in from the shore. This is a fairly wide beach area. I'd say that that strip of beach there, to put this thing in perspective a little bit, that strip of beach area is probably a half mile wide. So that white band you see there is probably a good half a mile in itself. That'll give you some idea of just how large the ammo dump is. The ammo dump itself is over a mile long. You'll notice in the water there are a couple of large, what they call LSTs, and then several small barges and smaller boats there. Slide number 35. Now this is another picture taken from out at sea, and I was still quite a ways off, as you can tell, from how small the fire and explosions look from here. Slide number 36. I've moved a little further up the coast this time, and still quite a ways out over the water. And as I started moving out this way, the wind has also started shifting, and is blowing the smoke more northwesterly now than westerly. So it's starting to shift around a little. I don't know if that makes any particular difference, but it will give you a little of a perspective perhaps on just where that smoke is going. You'll notice that it is making a real big, very large cloud of smoke, which actually drifted up against those mountains in the background there and hung there for several hours. Slide number 37. I have moved off to the north a little more for this particular shot, and I was kind of wishing that I had a telephoto so that I could pull these in closer. I know that this doesn't look like much of a fire from this slide, but if you could have heard how loud the noises were outside of my window, even with my aircraft engine running and everything, you would have realized just how powerful this actually was. And so it's a little misleading perhaps, but I am here probably 3 to 4 miles away and still up around 2 to 3,000 feet. Now looking back in the background there, you can see some of the rice paddies and a couple small lakes. And also you can see the mountain area that I referred to so much back to the west there. And of course this is where we are right now, back in there in that mountainous area. Now those particular mountains are up around from 2 to 3,000 feet. The highest ones in the area are about 3,300 to 3,400 feet. So they're not real big mountains. They remind you a lot of the first range of mountains along the coast in California there. although of course they're much more heavily vegetated. Slide number 31. Now this is my best picture of the actual explosions and the fire. This is as close as I did get actually, and at this point I am about a half mile out over the water and about 2,000 feet above the explosions. At this time the thing is going full blast, and as you can see, there are several different colors of smoke. The main black smoke is mainly a lot of the black powder and ammo and stuff like this. The lighter colored smoke, the white smoke to the left of it, this is mainly flares and white phosphorus grenades and all different types of incendiary type weapons. And then to the far right, over in there, there are several fuel cells. Most of those haven't started burning yet. There are a very large rubber bladder up there. And those took a while to get hot enough to cook off. And when they did, they made just a fantastically big fireball and a very large explosion. You'll notice the two barges right in the center of the picture, or slightly left of center. One of those was sunk by shrapnel shortly after I took this picture. It sank right to the bottom right there on the coast. In fact, it's still there. It's just sitting there in the bottom. And you can see some of the fire from the black smoke there at the just to the left of the center of the picture. And of course, there were just thousands of explosions going off every minute, almost every second, I guess you'd say, in this main smoke area. And a movie, I suppose, would have been much more effective to show you what was really going on, since this picture doesn't do the thing justice to all of the little flashes that were occurring there in that smoke all the time. But anyway, maybe this does give you some idea of just how large and how fantastic this ammo dump explosion really was. To point out perhaps just how big this is, that ship you see down there on the right, the LST, is big enough to carry several dozen trucks and jeeps, and also a whole battalion of soldiers. This will give you some idea of how big it is. Well, gang, that's the end of the slides, and I guess it's a good thing because it looks like my tape has just about run out, too. I certainly hope that you all enjoyed this bunch of slides, and I'll try and pass on some more in the future like this. I hope that you were able to match this tape up with the slides and got a good chance to look at them. I suppose one way you can do it is to just stop the tape if you want to look at one particular slide for a long time and then start it up again. Well, bye-bye, Dan.